All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yes, it's Friday, the 13th, 2017. October 13th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a chilly and overcast 57 degrees here in upstate New York, and we are in the full swing of fall. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Edible Nanobots, 21st Century Meds, Man, Machine, and the Allen Institute. We took a look at some pretty disturbing things, these new gelatin nanobots that you can ingest to deliver medicine and intervention inside of your body. We also covered another story about scientists coming up with a way to have little catheters that crawl like earthworms inside of your not only blood vessels, but also inside of your lung branches to be able to diagnose tumors and take biopsies. It's pretty disturbing. And when you look at these types of things, they're all going to be remotely controlled externally with some sort of connection to the Internet of Things. And as these implantables continue down that path and this doctor's smartphone technology that is coming to us all in the guise of Star Trek, just be aware that you will be connected to that same Internet of Things that will be controlled from above. I've seen quite a few disturbing things recently about the military and some of their new imagery and high definition data that they're going to have stored up in the cloud. And some of the tech companies jumping in and being able to use the Internet of Things on a daily basis in your lives. We read about Facebook and their mysterious Building 8 with Regina Duggan working on mind control technology. So you'll be able to type and think just with a little ECG cap on and be able to control your mouse and your keyboard while interacting. Well, now Google has announced that they have a few new partners in their anti-Amazon alliance going against Jeff Bezos, Amazon, and the Amazon Echo. Apparently, they have their whole new voice shopping capabilities using their new, I don't even know what an Echo goes for, $29.95. No, I think it's like $199, but pretty good price point to get that into everyone's homes. Voice command, you'd sit on the couch and turn down the lights. If you get some of the Nest products with Google, you can actually control your security, see who's at your front door, and all kinds of other things. Well, Google is now working with companies such as Target, Walmart, and Home Depot to get you to utilize their Alexa. I think that's Alexa. No, that's Amazon. Their Google products at home. Google and the country's biggest brick-and-mortar retailers have one main problem in common, and that is Amazon. Now, both sides are acting like they are serious about working together to do something about it. On Thursday, Target and Google, and that was Thursday, October 12th, so that must have been yesterday, Target and Google announced that they are expanding what was a years-old delivery partnership from a small experiment in a handful of cities to the entire continental U.S. The expansion will allow Target to become a retail partner in Google's voice shopping initiative, which lets owners of the Google Home smart speaker order items through voice command like owners of the Echo can do for Amazon. The announcement comes several weeks after Walmart inked a deal with Google to offer hundreds of thousands of products through the service, and other big box retailers like Home Depot are also on board. And I think I mentioned that the other day when I was shopping in one of those large home improvement stores. I actually saw a Google product sitting on the shelf for your smart home. Voice commerce was the core of these recent announcements, and it may someday become popular for types of shopping, like reordering household staples, but that is not what is the most interesting to me. and that would be the author of the story. Instead, it is the promise that Target is also beginning to work with Google to, quote, create innovative digital experiences using other cutting-edge technologies to elevate Target's strength and style, such as home, apparel, and beauty, unquote. So that's their elevator pitch. Target and Google teams are working on building experiences that digitally replicate the joy of shopping in a Target store to discover stylish and affordable products, says Target's digital chief Mike McNamara in a press release. If I were a betting man, I'd wager that augmented reality will be one of those areas where the two sides will seriously explore a way to work together. A Target spokesman says that it is too early to provide the details and future partnerships between the companies. Now, just think about this for a second. So you're going to get one of these Google Home or Amazon Echo devices in your house connected to the Internet of Things, which are listening devices and are voice activated. They are not only listening to what is going on in your household, but they are also capturing that audio and uploading it to the cloud. And we're going to look at that in a little bit here. But they are also utilizing this dopamine button, the dangling carrot of the excitement of shopping online, buying things, ding, have them shipped in 2 days. And when they add the augmented reality with your goggles, don't put those goggles on, guys, because they are addictive. That is the Pied Piper taking you down that path, which you can never escape. One reason for my guess for betting that augmented reality is coming is the use of the phrase digitally replicate the joy of shopping, which sounds like a hint at either augmented or virtual reality. Another reason, just this week at ShopTalk Europe, Google's director of augmented reality, George Jones, pitched retailers and an audience on working together, made the case why Google and retailers' interests are aligned. And while nodding to the obvious that Amazon poses a threat to retailers, Jones admitted that the e-commerce giant is also a threat to Google, since a lot of people are going to Amazon first when it comes to product searches, and there is plenty of data to back that up. Google has already worked with retailers like Lowe's to use augmented reality, which allows digital objects to be overlaid on the real world when viewed through a phone screen to help shoppers find the product that they are looking for when they are in the store. And the tech giant has also worked with Pottery Barn on an augmented reality application to let shoppers get a visual idea of what a new piece of furniture will look like in their home. IKEA, House, and Wayfair have built similar solutions into their apps. Jones also told the audience that Google would be building its own augmented reality applications focused on the retail world. And in a brief interview after his presentation, Jones said that one goal of this initiative is to give a wide range of shoppers the benefits of augmented reality features without requiring them to download a different application for every retailer they frequent. To be sure, once voice shopping or augmented reality partnerships won't be the difference between thriving or failing in an increasingly Amazon-led world, but a series of smart partnerships over the years between Google and big retailers will give both sides the best chance at fighting back. And right now, they sure need each other. So now let's look at some of these interconnected devices. Now, I'm not sure if you are aware, but a lot of these devices are not very secure. Here was an article that came out, and I hate when there is no date on it, but it wasn't too long ago because, October 1st, 2017, how to stop your devices from listening to and saving everything you say. See, they really want you to get one of these in your homes. It's just like your smartphone, but now even more invasive. Yes, voice technology is amazing. You can ask your phone a question. You can talk to your speaker system and look and book an Uber. But with the right setup, your voice can unlock doors, dim lights, change the thermostat. And all across America, people are embracing their oral fixation. And while virtual assistants are handy, they are always listening. And as more manufacturers and developers are jumping onto the audio tracking bandwagon, you may wonder how much your device is recording and what will happen to the audio files that they gather. Worst of all, the apps that use ultrasonic data to profile you. Ding, ding. Now remember, ultrasonic, you don't hear the tones, but your device does. More about that later. Some regular apps are designed to spy and report back recordings. Click here for five spy apps that could be watching and listening on your device right now. Are you creeped out yet? I don't know. Should we click? It's a little too tempting. Let's find out. This is on a website called Kim Commando. Five smartphone apps that could be listening to and watching you right now. Spy apps may have been designed so parents can watch their kids, but that is not where it stops. These sneaky apps can be used by boyfriends, girlfriends, family members, or even suspicious employers. So if someone you know seems to know a little too much about your life, they might be spying on you right now, not to get you paranoid or anything. And it is very easy to install an app. We'll tell you about five. And then at the end of this post, there's a pretty important tip to tell you how to remove spy apps that might be on your phone. One is called Spy Era. Now, this is freaking. Spy Era isn't just an app. It is an entire smartphone. The app comes pre-installed on various Apple and Android devices, so whoever gives you the phone could be monitoring all of your personal activity, like your employer. Spy Era software can listen in on phone calls and use your microphone to listen in on everything else that is happening near the smartphone or like one of your doctor's smartphone devices. And even if you it can even record audio as it is happening and store it for later. And that is not, if that is not enough to make you shiver, Spy Era can also track your instant messages, your texts, upload copies of the photos you take, spy on conversations held through applications like Skype, Viber, WeChat, etc., and log everything you type and even use the camera to spy on you physically. Perhaps the only thing about Spy Era that might bring you comfort is that it is pretty expensive. Anyone who wants to spy on you using Spy Era would have to provide the device to have the software installed and pay a hefty subscription on top of that. To give you an idea, 1 year of Spy Era costs $389 for a smartphone or $489 for the smartphone and the tablet. Number two is called The One Spy. If you use an iPhone or an iPad, then you need to watch out for The One Spy. It is a unique app that specifically targets gadgets that run on iOS, and it is scary. Once the software is installed, whoever installed it is essentially possession of everything that happens on that particular device. All the data collected by the One Spy is encrypted and sent to a web portal where a spy can review it. And this means someone could be reading your sent and received text messages and emails, listening to the recordings of your phone calls, snooping through your browser history, and more. The One Spy can also activate the microphone and camera on your device to spy on your surroundings. So any parent whose school gave the kids an iPad this year, be aware. The subscription plan for The One Spy isn't all that expensive, at least not when you compare it to the others out there. Purchasing 30 days of monitoring is $18, so someone could be spying on you for less than $20. Number three is FlexiSpy. Similar to the others mentioned above, FlexiSpy is an app that can be installed on your device to spy on activity. It shares many of the same features, but it gets worse. Not only can FlexiSpy monitor messages, data, and audio, it can spy on your GPS location, your passwords, and other applications. Plus, whoever installed the app can receive alerts for various triggers and can spy on you in secret since the application is hidden from the task manager. Premium plans for FlexiSpy cost $68, and the app can be used to monitor both Android and Apple smartphones and tablets. The other one is MSpy. If someone is paranoid enough to spy on you, they might be using MSpy. It's one of the most frightening things about MSpy is that its ability to monitor content from apps like Snapchat. It can also monitor your GPS location, and it can restrict incoming calls from a predefined number. MSpy is marketed toward parents who are worried about their child being contacted by someone they don't trust, and it is perfectly legal. However, it is possible that the software could be installed by an untrusting spouse or an employer who has access to your device. Plus, MSpy offers 24/7 customer support to help these spies find what they need. Worried yet? Well, it gets worse because MSpy also has a bundle kit that provides desktop monitoring too. That means that every device you access to use could be used to spy on you, and this bundle kit costs less than $20 a month. And last but not least is one mobile app called Heister Mobile. This spying software is known for its ability to monitor other apps you use on your device, such as Facebook, Instagram, Skype, WhatsApp, etc., and it can be installed remotely, and it can block any app that it is told to. And you might think that you can cover your tracks, but you're wrong. Heister Mobile has the ability to access messages and data that has already been deleted. Oh, no. Heister Mobile can also be used to completely lock a targeted phone, which means that you could lose access to your device entirely. And it works on both an Apple and Android devices, and it costs only a one-time fee of $70 to purchase the software. So how crazy is that? So now, let's extend this one step further as we increase the ubiquitousness of devices in our lives to these ones that listen to you. And that would be from people such as Google and Amazon. Creeped out? Well, a lot of consumers don't trust their virtual assistants and wonder how to switch them off. If you are worried about privacy risks of your smartphone's always on microphone, here are tips for turning it off, and I'm not going to get into these. Goes through how to do it in Facebook, blah, blah, blah. Amazon Echo, is Amazon Echo always listening? Well, Alexa is activated when it detects one of its wake words. Amazon, Alexa, computer, or Echo, you'll know when the device is ready for a command when the outer ring at the top glows blue. But before that happens, Alexa always has its ears open waiting to be addressed. And when activated, Alexa lets you search the web, play music, and control smart home devices you've added to your home network. For example, with the right smart gadgets, you can turn off the lights in another room, lock the front door, turn up the thermostat, turn on the laundry, etc. The downside is that Amazon keeps an audio recording on its servers of every voice command that you give to Alexa, along with a fraction of a second of audio before the wake word. The recording ends after the command has been processed, or so they say. I was surprised when I checked my Amazon Echo recordings, and that would be the author of the story. In one recording, I was explaining why I wasn't taking a deal on a commercial building that I had for sale. You shouldn't take a moment and check your recordings. Click here to hear how you can get all of your Amazon Echo recordings and how to delete them as well. For Siri, like Amazon Echo, Siri is always attentive. Even if you've forgotten your iPhone, it can hear with you. With iOS 8, Apple introduced the Hey Siri wake phrase, so you can summon Siri even without touching your phone. If you turn this feature on, this means that your iPhone mic is always listening, waiting for the phrase, Hey Siri. Apple says that this is processed locally on your iOS device and does not start recording until it hears Hey Siri. Once your request is recorded, it uploads the audio file to Apple's servers for processing. But that may still give you the willies. Luckily, you don't have to disable Siri completely to stop the Hey Siri feature. Here's the easiest way to turn Siri off. So if you want to know how, read this article. Google has recently released its latest masterpiece. OK Google is the wake prompt for Google's assistant on the Google Home speakers, Android smartphones, phones, and the Chrome browser. Every time you use OK Google or another voice-controlled function, your request is recorded and snippets are saved to your Google account. Luckily, Google introduced a new My Account tool that lets you access your recordings and delete them if you want. You can also tell Google to stop recording your voice for good, which I have a long time ago, and then it tells you how. And then there is Cortana, and this is the one from Microsoft. Finally, there is Cortana, the voice-activated system from Microsoft. The wake phrase is, Hey, Cortana, and like others on this list, it can answer questions, do searches, set appointments, and open applications. Also, like others, Cortana has raised some eyebrows, and here it tells you how to turn Cortana off. Ultrasonic technology, brace yourselves, because ultrasonic technology is hard to fathom. Some ingenious programmers created an app that can track high-frequency sounds that the human ears can't hear, but certain receivers can. Your smartphone or tablet can spy on you by using sound waves that you don't even know are there. Why would anyone want to collect these ultrasonic sounds? Because marketers can use the information to tailor their advertisements. The apps are looking for beacons, tiny auditory clues to suggest where you shop and what you like to buy, and marketers then pair browser cookies to track your behavior across multiple devices. In fact, hundreds of Android apps are already using ultrasonic to track their users' behavior, including physical location and their TV viewing habits. In response, Google has announced that Android apps that use ultrasonic tracking will be banned or suspended. Developers will have to prove that they adhere to Google Play Store's updated privacy policies, which require developers to disclose an app's ultrasonic features. Sorry, I needed a drink. And ask for permission before accessing the gadget's mic. And before you install anything on a mobile device, if you go to one of those app stores, there always is a scroll down and more information about what they collect when you install the freebie app. Remember, there is no free lunch. Anything that says it wants access to your microphone, to your phone calls, to your phone call history, to your email, to your images is too invasive. You don't want to give some Joe Blow, you don't even know who this is, who wrote the app and put it in the store, access to everything about your phone. Anyway, so if you're worried about ultrasonic tracking, check the permissions before you install an Android app. Cutting off your microphone may give you peace of mind, but remember, disabling mics may make speakers and virtual assistants much less useful. And I don't use mine at all, and I actually set my default language on my phone to Polish. So talk about messing with the voice response. If ever listening nature of these smart virtual assistants is what makes them compelling, hopefully developers will soon find a good compromise between security and ease of use. So now we're going to take a look talking about security and ease of use. There was a case back in 2016 about a murder that happened in Arkansas, and the gentleman where the murder occurred had an Amazon Echo, and the police wanted the data from the Amazon Echo to see whether or not there were any clues to the fact that the owner of the home said he didn't commit the murder, and the police said that it was suspicious and they thought that he did. So Amazon came out and said no initially, and they argued that Alexa's speech was protected by First Amendment rights. Pretty interesting. This came out of Forbes.com. Amazon argues Alexa's speech is protected by First Amendment in murder trial fight. Amazon is sticking to its guns in the fight to protect consumer data. The tech titan has filed a motion to quash the search warrant for recordings from an Amazon Echo in the trial of James Andrew Bates, accused of murdering his friend Victor Collins in Bentonville, Arkansas, November 2015. Sorry, I was wrong. And it is arguing that part of that motion, that the responses of Alexa, which is the voice of the artificially intelligent speaker, has First Amendment rights. Now, it's kind of a slippery slope because it's a good thing they were arguing that. But on the other hand, we are now giving a virtual assistant rights of a human. The first case came to light in December when it emerged that Amazon was contesting a warrant to provide audio from the Echo device covering a 48-hour period from November 21st through the 22nd, 2015, alongside subscriber and account information. Amazon handed over the subscriber information and the purchase history, but in its 90-page argument against the warrant, filed late last week and published in full below, Amazon said that recorded audio should have First Amendment protections, and so it wanted the warrant thrown out. Not only does Amazon believe Echo's users' voice commands are protected as free speech, but also that the Alexa voice service response is protected. Amazon argued that the requests and responses to Alexa contain details that would reveal much about the user and their interests, so it deserved protection from the government. And furthermore, as Alexa's responses reflect in some ways both the users and the Amazon speech, she is also protected, said the lawyer. At the heart of the First Amendment protection is the right to browse and purchase expressive materials anonymously without fear of government discovery, Amazon's legal team wrote later, explaining that these protections for Alexa were twofold. The responses may contain expressive material such as podcasts, an audiobook, or music requested by the user. Secondly, the response itself constitutes Amazon's First Amendment protected speech. So then what happens? Well, and I'm not quite sure here. Amazon, after pushing back, Amazon hands over Echo data in the Arkansas murder case. And this was March 7th, 2017. Amazon's First Amendment fight was short-lived. After pushing back against investigators, the tech giant handed over data from an Echo believed to contain vital information pertaining to a 2015 murder. The move, which occurred Friday, was initiated by the defendant, James Bates, who agreed to allow police to review the information retained on a smart home assistant. Now, either Mr. Bates wasn't too bright or he was innocent. I sure hope it didn't get him into trouble. I don't know. I tried to find an update on this and there wasn't one. Bates pleaded not guilty to the murder of Victor Collins, an acquaintance who was found floating dead in the hot tub at his home in Bentonville, Arkansas. The defendant told police he woke up to find Collins dead, believing the drowning to be an accident. Investigators, on the other hand, believe Collins was strangled and then drowned, and that Bates's Amazon Echo may hold the key to his involvement in the incident. Now, if you remember, we covered a story last week about predictive policing in the coming Internet of Things. And guys, this is where this is headed. You know, people laugh at me when I'm out in public and I take my cell phone and I stick it under a couch cushion. I'll tell you why. Not that I'm talking about anything that would be illegal, but I don't particularly like the fact that things that I am saying can be accessed by others that it does not pertain to, because that is a full invasion of my privacy. Well, just remember, as we move forward in the 21st century and we have these interconnected devices and you have cardiologists that are so excited about giving you an implantable in your chest that can record information and beam it out without you knowing for a 3-year period, that every one of these devices could be an invasion into your life. Bates was charged with murder in February of last year, and police approached Amazon with a warrant for information from the home assistant. Amazon complied in part, handing over transaction records, but the company pushed back against a request to hand over audio data with a lengthy filing that demanded that they give First Amendment protection. Amazon argued that handing over such data would constitute a violation of consumer rights and that the investigator's case wasn't cause enough to hand over data collected by the Echo's onboard microphones. The real First Amendment battle, it seems, would have to wait for another day. And you know what I was thinking? Because if they did hand over that data, it would be known how much of that data is collected even when you think the device is off. We'll have to wait for another day, as it was Bates himself who apparently offered up the information. A hearing this Wednesday, which was in 2017, may offer more insight into what precisely the Echo heard, and perhaps more broadly, how much information the hub is gathering and saving via its always-on microphones at any given time. And wink, that's what I'm saying, because this would be detrimental for Amazon if you found out that there was all kinds of stuff that it was collecting. And remember, Jeff Bezos is in partnership with the CIA. He built them a parallel Amazon cloud. For Amazon and other hardware makers, this case is likely just the beginning of conversations around privacy and First Amendment rights surrounding the ever more ubiquitous home assistants. So, I found a third story about this very case. Again, this is from 2017, but this one brings up some good points. We're going to look at this anyway. A murder case tests Alexa's devotion to your privacy. The Amazon Echo can seem like your very best friend, and that's what they want, until it betrays you. And that is because this device is different from anything else in your house. Alexa, the voice assistant that powers Echo and more, is always listening, sending what you say after using the wake word to Amazon servers. Of course, the Echo isn't the only voice assistant speaker on the market, but it sits in millions of homes right now, and Alexa is headed to devices from companies like Ford, Dish, Samsung, and Whirlpool. So I wasn't joking about do the laundry or the dishes. Thankfully, before Alexa can betray you, Amazon is taking steps to push back. Arkansas police recently demanded that Amazon hand over information from Hooters suspects. Echo, Amazon's attorneys contended that there was First Amendment free speech protections, but then the accused decided to give the police the information. If Amazon had its way, the police must prove the state has a compelling need for the information and the material can't be obtained somewhere else, like from another source that is in a person's possession. And the information must be sought in specific and integral to the investigation. If the police meet this test, the judge will review the information in private and decide what information should be disclosed. Blah, blah, blah. But law enforcement, and I thought this was interesting, this is out of Wired Magazine, law enforcement has a well-documented history of expanding investigations into areas that test an individual's right to privacy. The Supreme Court in 1967, Katz versus the United States, determined that the FBI's use of an electronic eavesdropping device affixed to the outside of a telephone booth was an invasion of privacy and that the material it collected could not be offered as evidence at trial. The decision demonstrates that there are limits to what police can do in their investigations and may provide guidance for the courts in considering Amazon's arguments. Amazon's effort to protect the data of your Echo, because this is good for shareholder numbers, collects by invoking the First Amendment is commendable, but the company has failed to address the real problem. Why is all that data just sitting on Amazon servers in the first place? And the brief Amazon filed in the Arkansas court system confirms that the company saves the recordings and transcripts of your dialogue, so they transcript it as well, with Alexa on the servers where, quote, all data is protected during transmission and securely stored, unquote. So should we just trust Amazon servers are impenetrable? Well, maybe. Digital assistants like Echo and Google's Home are backed by sophisticated cloud-based artificial intelligence systems connected to your home through the internet to at least one speaker and an always-on microphone. Ding. Using the right trigger phrase, the digital assistant is all ears, ready to do your bidding, streaming music, answering questions, and controlling your smart home device, scheduling events, and especially for Amazon, for buying things. Now just think about this. If they can be pre-programmed with keywords that turn them on, who's to say that just like some of those stealth spy devices on your smart device, intelligence agencies couldn't have them pre-programmed with keywords like, you know, the ones on the list for the FBI recording your calls way back when or for making you suspicious. Especially as the cameras are involved, facial expressions to show that you're lying. Who's to say that those aren't going to be pre-programmed at some point in the not too distant future to at that point then turn on recording and save those in a special hidden file somewhere in the event they are ever needed. Think of the assistants like really smart dogs. They are always ready to react to specific commands. And also, like a really smart dog, they can remember those commands forever. And this concept of an always-on, always-connected, always-remembering, listening device is where things get intriguing. Amazon argues that Alexa only records when the trigger word is spoken, yeah, which one, and that users can mute their device by pressing a button. But consider this. In the Oscar-winning documentary called Citizen 4, during a meeting with journalists, Laura Portreyes and Glenn Greenwald, Edward Snowden disconnects a landline in the hotel room because, quote, it might be used as a listening device. And that's like totally old school. Mobile phones, computer webcams, and now digital assistants can also be co-opted for nefarious purposes. So this guy's just realizing that. And these are not potential listening devices, but these devices are listening devices, which is why they exist. And if a hotel room phone can be rigged as a listening device for other than its original purpose, why not something rigged to listen all the time? Let's look at a few scenarios. These are a few less specific to Amazon's technology and policies, but variants that could apply to the Google Home and other digital assistants. Let's say you're meeting with your attorney and you confess that you had an affair with a woman named Alexa and happened to say the trigger phrase. After all, more than 100,000 people born in the past 25 years were given that name. Who has access to that recording? And what if, in a meeting, someone triggers the device to record a conversation without your permission? This would also be legal, if unethical, if a so-called one-party consent state like California, where it requires permission from both parties, one did not consent to the recording. This brings up a more basic question. Do you have to give informed consent to be recorded each time you enter My Alexa and My Alexa outfit at home? Do you have to actively request your permission? And who at Amazon or beyond gets to see what tendencies are revealed by your Alexa commands? Amazon claims that you can permanently delete your voice recordings, though wiping them degrades the performance. Of course it does. And if you're smart enough to clear your browser history, are you smart enough to clear this too? And what happens to the transcripts? Another question, how do you feel when your digital assistant is recording what you say? Amazon provides several ways to activate the recording beyond the wake word. A light on the Echo turns blue to indicate audio is streaming to the cloud. And after the request is processed, the audio feed is supposed to close. You can also set the device to play a sound when it stops streaming your audio. But what happens when the device is hacked or modified to keep recording? Ding, ding. There are endless scenarios where digital assistants could become problematic. Current law, as always with fast emerging technologies, will struggle to catch up. Amazon's contentions in the Arkansas criminal case overall offer a good start for setting legal standards, but of course those never happened. And of course, these issues apply beyond Amazon and Alexa. In fact, they may be more problematic with Google Home and other competitors. Among other things, Google Home has access to your private calendar, and it knows the events that were important enough to flag for a particular day. It also can read your email. And Google's privacy policies and other online materials about Home don't directly address the voice recording issues, but its policies do say that Google will share your information with companies, organizations, and individuals outside of the Google if it has good faith belief that access, use, and preservation or disclosure of the information is reasonably necessary to meet applicable law, regulations, legal processes, and enforceable government request. In short, it appears that Google does not ask your permission to share your voice recordings. And yes, you can delete your history in Google Home, but unlike Amazon, the company says doing so will limit the personalized experience for features like Google Assistant. Millions of people are putting digital assistants into their lives with no clue about the potential havoc this, and I've said this before, Trojan horse could bring. Based on what Amazon and Google say about their devices, everyone needs to recognize the unresolved legal issues involving this new technology and beware of who or what is listening. So there you have it, people. Do not run out and buy one of these devices, because it'll be cool to order things and get your dopamine dose on Amazon with a voice response. So now let's look at Network World, IoT, that would be the Internet of Things and crime prevention, balancing justice with privacy. Issues of privacy increase as Internet of Things sensors collect more information about us and criminal investigators seek to use that data as evidence. And think about it, as they can splice and dice audio and splice and dice video, and you got artificial intelligence that's scanning all this stuff. How long is it going to be before they will have some sort of manufactured evidence against you, or maybe something that is flagged suspicious? And when they start looking at all of your Internet of Things actions that have been recorded about you, that there is an eyebrow raised and you become one under suspicion, because this is where it gets scary. A homeowner reports a robbery and his internet-enabled pacemaker, we talked about this before, doesn't indicate any change in his heart rate during the robbery. Can investigators obtain the information from the service provider, and should they? Well, issues of privacy increase as Internet of Things sensors collect more information about us. What rights do individuals have over the information collected about them from Dr. Smartphone? And can the accuracy of the sensors be trusted? Well, Sherlock Holmes, in the case of the Silver Blaze was a crime Sherlock Holmes solved. but it is about the disappearance of a famous racehorse the night before the race and the murder of the horse's trainer. Holmes solves the mystery by recognizing that the watchdog at the stable did not bark during the crimes. The fact that the dog didn't bark when you'd expect it to while the horse was being stolen led Sherlock Holmes to conclude that the evildoer was not a stranger to the dog, but someone the dog recognized and thus would not cause the dog to bark, explains Mike Skolnicki, a freelance appellate attorney, in his blog. Holmes drew a conclusion from the fact that a barking dog that did not occur, which can be referred to as a negative fact. In the reported burglary, the absence of any change in the homeowner's heart rate could also be considered a negative fact. Forensics applies to science, to criminal investigations, to follow the legal standard of admissible evidence in criminal procedure. A host of issues arises around sensor data being used in investigations. How accurate is the sensor data, and is the information collected actually for the person being investigated? And could information have been tampered with in transmission or while stored? Who owns the sensor data, and under what situations should the Internet of Things service provider data be shared? And does the Internet of Things sensor data constitute admissible evidence? And what really caught my attention about this story is that there is a picture underneath that little blurb of somebody standing close up showing their chest, with their hand on the middle of their chest, right about where that little chest implantable would be, with then a little bar graph data above it, and then showing next to it a little box with fingerprints and a magnifying glass. So that little implant that my cardiologists were talking about would probably be one of those devices. Established in 2005, an agency called the Online Trust Alliance is a charitable organization with a mission to enhance online trust and empower users while promoting innovation and the vitality of the Internet. It recently released its IoT Trust Framework to help security Internet of Things devices and to help secure Internet of Things devices and their data. Their trust framework can be downloaded, and applications to join the alliance can also be downloaded. The rise of the Internet of Things has brought the fourth generation of devices and services, representing significant innovation, yet all too many of these ship insecurely and are not supported over their lifetime. They have become proxies for abuse with a capacity to cause significant harm. And that is where you got to wonder. The Internet of Things was attacked back in 2016, which brought out all kinds of government agencies, including DARPA, talking about scanning 80% of all the IP addresses and looking for insecure software and putting little scanning software on them to make sure that they don't turn into botnet attackers. Well, there was a story that came out the other day. Internet of Things attacks could bring real-world damage. So as these devices roll out into every single one of our homes, and they have not been made secure to begin with, they are a big, wide-open hole for hackings and crackings and attackings that are going to put you at the forefront of this war on your privacy. Cyber experts warn that lack security of billions, not just millions, but billions of new networked Internet of Things devices will create a target-rich environment that could have devastating consequences. Members of Congress received a dire warning this week about security vulnerabilities in the so-called Internet of Things, as cyber experts cautioned that with billions of new devices coming online, coordinated hacking attacks could become not only literally, but figuratively a matter of life and death. House lawmakers convened the hearing of the Internet of Things security in response to a distributed denial of service attack on the Internet addressing provider DYN, which resulted in a temporary outage of popular sites like Twitter and Spotify. But that incident, while a nuisance for Internet users and an embarrassment for companies affected, might only be a prelude to a far more serious attack with potential catastrophic consequences in the physical world as things start coming online. this is more dangerous. This is more dangerous as our systems get more critical. The DOIN attack was benign, causing a couple of websites to go down, but Internet of Things, the world in which a direct physical manner, which would be our connected cars, our appliances, our thermostats, and our airplanes, and there's real risk to life and property. It's a matter of life and death. Schreiner and other witnesses gave a sobering assessment to other security statuses of the exploding Internet of Things, where billions of devices are projected to come online over the next few years, many of which are everyday objects such as household appliances, generally low-margin items mass-produced by manufacturers that don't employ an army of security specialists found at tech companies like Apple and Google. Inadequate Internet of Things security could have dire consequences. And you know, dire consequences, something I was thinking about, a lot of these devices work on ultrasonic technologies with little chirps and clirps. Well, there was a story this morning, one of the only stories that actually caught my attention and made me sit up straight. They have now acquired the very first recording of the high-pitched sonic weapon linked to the attacks on the U.S. Embassy workers in Cuba. And there is a recording on this page. Don't listen to it. I listened to it for 10 seconds, and it was really high-pitched and screwy. Don't listen to it. The first public recording of a high-pitched cricket-like sound out of Havana could be linked to the attacks on U.S. Embassy workers, according to a new report. The recording, first released by the Associated Press on Thursday, is reportedly one of the first several from Havana that led investigators to believe a sonic weapon was involved. The Americans affected in Cuba, and I think we read the other day, was over 21 of them. Not all of them reportedly hearing the sounds, but some who did, while not identical, said the recording was relatively consistent with what they heard. "That is the sound," said one witness. The recording, which has not yet provided much insight into what is harming diplomats, was sent to the U.S. Navy for further examination. The Navy has advanced capabilities for analyzing acoustical signals. It is unclear whether the sounds are directly responsible for the attacks, which have been shown to cause hearing, cognitive, visual, balance, sleep, and other problems. I thought we also read like some sort of brain damage. At least 22 embassy workers were injured in the attacks that began last year in Havana. As a result, the U.S. has pulled 60% of its government employees out of the country. It also expelled 15 Cuban diplomats from the embassy in Washington. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said the move was made because Cuba had failed to protect American diplomats on its soil. The Cuban government has denied all knowledge for the involvement in the attacks, calling the U.S. move hasty and irresponsible. The State Department also issued a warning to American tourists. Of course, tourist companies don't think that there's an issue, urging them to stay away from Cuba, saying that the U.S. cannot guarantee that individuals staying in Cuba will not also be harmed. Some U.S. tourists have since complained of symptoms similar to those experienced by government workers. The recording was shared with workers at the U.S. Embassy in order to teach them what to listen for. And because the limited information is available, the U.S. government has only been able to advise workers that if they think they are being attacked, they should move to another area because the attack is unlikely able to follow them. Now, what was very interesting about this fact, I was thinking about this. Let's say we all get these listening Google and Amazon devices into our home, and we find out that a lot of these devices, as well as our cell phones, communicate by ultrasound. Hold on. I found a study earlier, and I left it upstairs, so I got to find it again. I bet I got to spell correctly. Who's to say that if all of these devices are pretty vulnerable to hack attacks? Who's to say that our devices couldn't be attacked and have some sort of ultrasound pulse put through them that may cause some sort of effect on our end? What if there was a mass attack of the Internet of Things by some sort of ultrasonic hacker? What would happen then? I don't know, just postulating, guys. But I thought it was interesting. And then there was another story I found this morning, MIT Technology Review. News.mit.edu, brainwaves reflect different types of learning. For the very first time, researchers have identified neural signatures of explicit and implicit learning. figuring out how to pedal a bike and memorizing the rules of chess require two different types of learning. And now for the very first time, researchers have been able to distinguish each type of learning by the brainwave patterns it produces. Three distinct neural signatures could guide scientists as they study the underlying neurobiology, how we learn motor skills, and work through complex cognitive tasks. While neurons fire, they produce electrical signals that combine to form brainwaves that oscillate at different frequencies. Our ultimate goal is to help people with learning and memory deficits, notes Miller. We might find a way to stimulate the human brain or optimize training techniques to mitigate those deficits. Neural signatures could help identify changes in learning strategies that occur in diseases such as Alzheimer's, of course, and with an eye to diagnosing these diseases earlier or enhancing certain types of learning to help patients cope with the disorder. I was just thinking that ultrasound actually was found to, I think, get rid of Alzheimer's plaques. Hold on. Ultrasounds, Alzheimer's plaques. I think it also opens up the blood-brain barrier, if I'm not mistaken. Focused ultrasound trialed for Alzheimer's disease. The aim is to modulate the blood-brain barrier to make it more porous for anti-amyloid drugs. So that's what it does. It opens up the blood-brain barrier ultrasound, and they are using it on our devices that we carry around with us every day. Oh, here it is. Here's another one. The histological effects of high-intensity pulsed ultrasound exposure with subharmonic emissions in rabbit brains. In this study, the threshold for subharmonic emissions during an in vivo sonication of a rabbit brain was investigated. In addition, histological effects of pulse sonication above this threshold were studied. There was considerable variation from experiment to experiment, but multiple pulse experiments at the frequency of 1.72 megahertz at an intensity of 7,000 watts showed that the histological effects from no observable damage of the tissue to blood-brain barrier breakage to local hemorrhagia to local destruction of the tissue to gross hemorrhagics resulting in the death of the animal. The severity of the tissue damage increased as the pulse duration, number of pulses, and the repetition frequency increased, and the results indicated that the endpoint of tissue damage may be controlled by selecting the sonification parameters. Such control over tissue effects can have several different applications when brain disorders are treated. So if they cranked up the pulsing and the frequency of sonic pulses and the number of the duration, the number of pulses and the frequency, they could cause mass catastrophic damage to brains of rabbits. I don't know, guys. I just started thinking about this morning. And as all these devices roll out that communicate over this ultrasonic pathway that none of us can hear, it's got to make you wonder if that ever could be utilized as a path of attack. I think, didn't we find out how they were predicting that sex robots of the future could be attacked and may turn them into killer robots? Well, here is another one. Dell Technology is now committing $1 billion. Yes, that is $1 billion with a B to the future of the Internet of Things. Dell Technology this Tuesday announced the formation of a new Internet of Things solution strategy, a new Internet of Things division, and a new $1 billion commitment to the Internet of Things research and development. Chairman and CEO Michael Dell called the Internet of Things the infrastructure of the next industrial revolution, and that is what we are co-inventing with our customers and our partners. The company's new Internet of Things division, led by VMware CTO Ray Farrell, is charted with orchestrating Internet of Things products and services, and the Internet of Things solution division will combine internally developing technologies with offerings from the vast Dell Technology ecosystem to deliver complete solutions for the customer. Dell Technologies has long seen an opportunity within the rapidly growing world of the IoT. Given its rich history in the edge computing markets, our new IoT division will leverage their strengths across the Dell Technology families of businesses to ensure that we deliver the right solution in combination with our vast partner ecosystem to meet customers' needs and help them deploy and integrate Internet of Things systems with greater ease. That means Internet of Things everywhere. Much of the underlying conversation was about a move away from the focus on cloud-based delivery, more toward a distributed computing, as much as commentary about the benefits of edge-based computing, particularly in regards to latency, Internet of Things security, and cost benefits. According to Michael Dell, Dell Technology is leading the way for their customers for a new distributed computing architecture that brings Internet of Things and artificial intelligence together all in one. Interdependent ecosystems from the edge to the core to the cloud and implications for a global society will be nothing short of profound. Guys, I just covered a story this morning about this whole connectivity and bringing in robotics and the Internet of Things, and the UN is behind it all because this is fueling the world of globalization. This is what's bringing us on board and making us all a part of the global Internet of Things. So they're investing $1 billion in the Internet of Things to roll out to companies and consumers alike. And it will get it into every home, every business, and make you less secure. Internet of Things and problems, the issues that bedevil any new technology. It is an amazing new technology as it partners the Internet of Things devices and artificial intelligence. It gets it into every one of our lives. But it was just a dream. But now this technology has taken the world by storm and is growing with incredible speed. Morgan Stanley actually predicts that by 2020, there will be 75 billion connected devices, including ones that are inside of you. Internet of Things applies to devices that are connected and networked together through the use of the Internet. And this will be where 5G rolls it all out. And some of these devices are regularly used machines that are made into smart machines using the Internet. And other devices are completely new machines that are created expressly for use in a connected environment like your smart homes. And all of these machines are enabled by growing computer power and packages that continue to get smaller and smaller until they are inside of you, little nanobots, using unlimited wireless internet. The IoT eruption is very interesting, as the internet has been around for quite a while, and everything connected to it has to be some sort of object. However, it now seems that anything from refrigerators to doorbells to cars require an internet connection, and it is available as a smart device. So there you have it, people. Not that we learned anything new, but it is everywhere, and it is going to get out of control. Have